12 minutes past 9 o'clock. Now, on Thursday, we had just started our conversation with a young man called Angelo, and we had just gotten into that conversation when President Cyril Ramaphosa took to the podium to announce what he believes was the best form of action for us during the lockdown, and we had to cut this interview with Angelo short. Angelo is a drug-dependent person. I've met him, I think, about a year ago. He was helping and was part of a counseling group for drug-dependent people, and particularly people who inject drugs like heroin. Angelo joins us now on the line. Angelo, how are you doing? So sorry we had to cut our interview short last week. How are you doing?
No problem, Lester. I'm doing well.
No, that's excellent, man. I wanted to get into that conversation on Thursday, about you. I met you about a year ago. And yes. You had detailed plans that you said that you were feeling great. You were part of counseling. You were positive about life. You told me that you have a girlfriend and a child who is in New Zealand, and you want to go visit them, and you want to clean up, and you want to go join them there in that country. So when I heard and I saw a picture of you last week, I wasn't disappointed. I was saddened that is particularly with the dreams and the plans that you had. Mm-hmm. What happened over the last year?
Well, things weren't going too well with me and Stephanie, and there was a lot going on between our family and I, and we couldn't work things out between the two of us, and I've just been battling with that, and politics at work, and I guess I just didn't have the confidence in myself to take it on alone, man. Mm. Support wasn't there, and I feel a little bad myself, but I'm picking things up again. You should see a picture of me now.
Is it?
Really.
Look, I saw a picture and a video of you just after you had come from Strandfontein. Strandfontein is the temporary shelter site by the city of Cape Town. What led you to going to Strandfontein?
No, I've been picked up by law enforcement in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a choice that I had to make. It I was just forcefully taken from there, from the street, into a site next to what you call the safe space in Culemborg. And they kept us there for 2 weeks, and then after the 2 weeks had passed, they then loaded us on buses, all of the homeless that they brought in, that they collected from the streets, and then from then they drove us to Strandfontein. But the way they operate, they just keep us there, don't give us any information about what is going on. There's no radio, there's no TV, so we don't get any news. They don't even tell us what their plans are with us. The only good thing was that they were at least feeding us.
Yeah.
But besides that, the help with the sick, there's very little help.
Were you still injecting drugs by the time they picked you up and took you to Strandfontein?
Yeah, I was still using them, because at least when we were in Culemborg, we got daily passes to go out, so I managed to go in school, mission and go in school. Mm. So by the time I hit Strandfontein, I was beginning to withdraw then.
Yeah.
So by the time I hit full-blown withdrawal in my cold turkey, I tried everything to get help from the city. Mm. There is absolute no help for people who are withdrawing from any drug, whether it's methamphetamine or heroin.
Now,
and people get sick, really sick.
Before I want to get into the feeling of withdrawal, lockdown was announced 4 weeks ago. Everything from cigarettes, alcohol, limited supply, you could still get, let's be honest, you can still get cigarettes and alcohol on the black market now. But how easy was it, or how difficult was it for you to still score heroin when it was lockdown?
It never got any less any harder than what it was before lockdown.
Mm.
It still remained the same easy. Yeah. It's strange, though, how the homeless can be removed from the streets, but then the dealers don't get touched. Because the dealers are right there where they were before lockdown. They're still making their money.
Mm.
Yeah. They still are. Even at the 6-6, you can still find them over there at the field opposite the mosque. They're still there.
What was that feeling like? Were you looking forward to going to a safe space where you maybe could get cleaned up, or did you know what was expecting you in terms of those feelings of withdrawals? What was your feeling in your bones when you were taken to Strandfontein?
Yeah, I did sort of think that this is an opportunity for me to turn my life around here, but I was sort of expecting a whole lot more help from the city, since there were occasions where we were promised help that we would be getting treatment for our withdrawal. Mm. I've been even promised from a law enforcement officer as well that there would be methadone arranged for us.
Mm.
But then if I bumped into him the following day, he would just say that, no, he tried his best, but then he couldn't work methadone on the site. There was even an occasion when I was sitting waiting to see the doctor when the doctor got hassled and chased off-site, was there to help us, to help the drug-dependent people from the streets there.
We are speaking to a young man or a gentleman called Angelo. We had spoken to him on this show about a year ago, talking to us about the stigma surrounding particularly people who inject drugs like heroin. And in the city, we see particularly a lot of people around the CBD who at night are huddled close together, and many of them can be seen in plain sight injecting drugs. And a couple of weeks ago, I saw a video of Angelo, who at that time I thought was getting his life together. He had told me about his hopes, his dreams, and it was quite a saddened experience to see him just gotten out of the Strandfontein temporary site. But I'm glad to hear from him now that he's turned a corner again. Angelo, just if you can explain to us, people who don't know, what is the feeling of going cold turkey after years of heroin use feel like?
It's really hard to explain, because it's, okay, if I could put it into words, it's everything that you least expect. Physically, all to go on at once. It's a cold, a flu, and a fever, and pain in places that is really agonizing. It feels sometimes like my back is totally dried out, like my bone is dried. And there are some feelings where I go so restless. It feels as if things are sort of moving its way underneath my skin, where I cannot sleep at all.
Mm.
It's the worst insomnia ever. Mm. But it's just making it through that first week mainly of the withdrawals, when the worst of the detox is over. If I can make it through that week, then I'm fine.
Mm.
But it's like people say, we won't die, but it feels as if. Mm. That's how it feels, really.
Do you sometimes feel like as if, without leading you into this answer, does it sometimes feel as if you would rather feel like dying? Is that is that how that feeling is?
I tried that route. I had an attempt once. That was in 2016, and then out of desperation in the Strandwantein camp. I thought, look, there's no way out. There's no way over this fence. I can't run away. They're going to catch me. So let me try and tell these people, look, I'm way past depression. Depressed is, using that word is, for the way I'm feeling is, that's not right. I'm just finished now. I'm done. I've had it. And I'm going to take my life. So please help me. If you're going to admit me, I'm willing to do an involuntary intake. Take me away.
Wow.
And these people, they ignored me. First place they took me was to Victoria Hospital. As I got there, upon arrival, they discharged me immediately. Didn't even have a look at me. Didn't even check my vitals. They just discharged me. I went outside, had a smoke with one of the gentlemen who said, look, there's so much space here in the psych ward on the first floor. You can't believe that. If it says here on the notes that I'm suicidal, that they would discharge me right away because it's not ethical for them to do so. I mean, somebody comes up to you and says he's willing to take his life, you're going to let that person leave your side. If anything happens to that person, on whose hands is it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not that I was really serious about taking my life, but I mean,
you wanted a way to
leave that
to
place.
Leave that
people
place,
were dying around me. People were dying around me. A guy died on my second day there. They came and collected his body off the fire. People had their breakfast and their lunch in that tent with dead bodies. People were throwing up, puking. People were defecating in the tent. It wasn't a safe place to be. They mixed people with TB, people with a whole lot of other serious conditions, and thugs and gangsters all in one.
Yeah.
They throw us all in one tent.
Now Angelo, everyone is thinking about coronavirus. Everyone is taking precautions. Everyone's thinking about their health, their safety, and that of their families. You, as someone who up until recently was still injecting, during that time, in between getting a score, chilling around wherever, was this ever a concern, ever a topic of conversation, ever an anxiety of yours about coronavirus?
No, not really. Not really. I'm close. I like to be updated with my latest news and everything. So I like to go and read newspapers. I'm always in the internet cafe. I'm on YouTube. I'm searching for what's going on around me. So I do my homework, my research.
But you had no anxiety or stress about contracting coronavirus.
No, not really.
Why is that? Why would you say that is?
Because the way I kept my looking after myself and for what I was doing at that time, even the way I was missioning, I was tutoring kids of Afrikaans at the time. So even when I arrived at the home before entering, I remove my shoes, I head to the bathroom, I wash up, I sanitize, I get the board and the chalk, and I start teaching.
I understand you're in a safe space at the moment. I'm very, very glad to hear that. What is the plan for you, particularly as we, you know, go through this lockdown and hopefully soon come out of this lockdown? Last year I spoke to you. You said about plans of reuniting with your child and the child's mother. You just told me now that is now a different plan. What is now your hopes if you come out of lockdown?
I'd still love to relocate. I'm going to have to go into a little bit more research, but what I can do now or when I do get there. But I think that when I get out here, when I do go and get my provident fund and my unemployment, I'll see if I've got enough money for me to just go and see my kiddo. And then I take it from there.
Well, Angelo, I am very relieved to hear you are doing so much better. I'm glad that you are in a safe space. And just hang in there, man. I have much respect for you and of knowing your story. I'm really, really glad that currently you're in a place of safety and you're really looking after yourself. Thanks so much for coming on here with us, man.
Thank you, Alicia.